Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we have news about mandatory water cuts ordered statewide by Governor Brown of historic proportions. We'll have news about a farm workers' strike in Mexico and, from the Middle East, news about a major Iraqi city taken back from ISIS forces. Learn about drones approved for SDG&E to use in East County and about a bizarre case involving a school employee in Lemon Grove. Hear why attorneys working for the state of California say it's a waste of taxpayer money for the PUC to hire private criminal defense lawyers to defend former Chairman Michael Peavy. Plus, learn about federal agents busted for stealing digital currency. And then we'll have some April Fool's Day fun for you today, including some strange but true real stories and some fake news stories you just may wish were true. Our Brewbeat reporter will tell you which San Diego breweries ranked in the top 50 nationwide, and will tell you about efforts by El Cajon Police to help Special Olympics athletes. We will also be replaying our interview with representatives of the San Diego Concert Band, talking about their upcoming concert next week. On Destination East County, hear about some amazing events across our region, from a Taste of Julian culinary tour to a flash jam featuring hundreds of musicians converging to play some old-time fiddle music. Plus, on Tribal Beat, hear why some Native Americans are opposed to Pope Francis' plans to declare Father Junipero Serra a saint. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, because East County matters. Governor Jerry Brown on Wednesday issued a historic executive order requiring all cities and counties in California to cut their water use by 25%. The governor made the announcement at Phillips Station in the Sierras, where electronic readings show the Sierra Nevada snowpack is lower than any year on record dating back to 1950. It's just 8% of the historical average in late March. Governor Brown says, "Today we are standing on dry grass where there should be 5 feet of snow. This historic drought demands unprecedented action. Therefore, I am issuing an executive order mandating substantial water reductions across our state. As Californians, we must pull together and save water in every way possible." The move follows a drought state of emergency declaration last year, when the state took steps to assure water would be available for critical needs such as fighting fires. Millions of dollars have also been spent by the state helping thousands of California families most impacted by the drought to pay their bills, put food on their tables, and have water to drink. Now, for the first time in the state's history, the governor has directed the State Water Resources Control Board to implement mandatory water reductions in cities and towns across California to reduce water usage by 25%, a savings that amounts to about 1.5 million acre-feet of water over the next 9 months. To save even more water now, the order will also replace 50 million square feet of lawns throughout the state with drought-tolerant landscaping in partnership with local governments, create a temporary statewide consumer rebate program to replace old appliances with more water and energy-efficient models, require school campuses, golf courses, cemeteries, and other large landscapes to make significant cuts in water use, and prohibit new homes and developments from irrigating with potable drinking water unless water-efficient drip irrigation systems are used. In addition, the order bans watering of ornamental grass on public street medians. To increase enforcement of conservation requirements, the governor's order calls on local water agencies to adjust their rate structures and implement conservation pricing aimed at encouraging consumers to cut water use and discourage water waste. Agricultural water users have borne much of the brunt of the drought to date, with hundreds of thousands of fallowed acres in California, water allotments slashed, and thousands of farm workers laid off. Under the governor's order, agricultural growers will be required to report more water use information to state regulators, increasing the state's ability to enforce against illegal diversions and waste and unreasonable use of water. Additionally, the governor's action strengthens standards for agricultural water management plans submitted by big agricultural water districts, and it requires small ag water districts to develop similar plans in case the drought extends another year. Additional actions required by the order include enforcement action against water agencies in depleted groundwater basins that have not shared their data on groundwater supplies with the state, updating standards for toilets and faucets and outdoor landscaping in residential communities, and taking action against communities that ignore these standards. Also, making monthly reporting permanent for water usage, conservation, and enforcement actions by local water suppliers. The order also has provisions to streamline governmental response to drought emergencies, including directing state departments to provide temporary relocation help to families who need to move away from homes where wells have run dry into houses with running water. The measure also streamlines permitting of emergency drought salinity barriers to protect freshwater supplies for human use and habitat for endangered and threatened species. In addition, the order incentivizes promising new technology to make California more water efficient. To learn about all the actions the state has taken to manage our water system and cope with impacts of the drought, you can visit drought.ca.gov. Every Californian should take steps to conserve water. Find out how at saveourwater.com.
Farm workers in the Valley of San Quintin in Baja California, Mexico, staged a strike last week, including many Native Americans protesting low pay and deplorable working conditions. With food left rotting in the fields, shoppers in Southern California and Mexico may pay more for their fresh fruits and vegetables, according to Reporting San Diego. The United Farm Workers sent a letter of support for the Mexican field workers. "We believe that all of us who work in the fields, picking strawberries, tomatoes, or doing any other field work, deserve good pay and respect. With our work, we feed the world." The striking workers traveled through northern Mexico to raise awareness of their demands. The governor's office reports that thousands of workers are now back at work and that an agreement just reached would increase their pay by 15%, though still far short of the 300 pesos a day that workers sought, or about $21 a day. They also sought overtime pay and for employers to respect the law, which requires that pregnant women get 6 weeks paid time off before and after delivery. The workers also complain of sexual abuses and conditions that amount to modern-day slavery. Recently, confrontations between state police and field workers have resulted in violence with rocks, tear gas, and bullets exchanged. Some people have disappeared, and there are allegations of police brutality of workers taken into custody. San Diego's Frente Indigenista Binacional has come out in support of the San Quintin workers, condemning violations of human rights alleged at a dozen companies. This has been Leon Thompson on East County Magazine.
This is Miriam Raftery with some breaking news out of the Middle East. Iraqi forces backed by U.S. airstrikes have been pummeling the city of Tikrit in Iraq, seeking to wrest control away from Islamic State terrorists, or ISIS. Now, the Iraqi Defense Minister Khalid al-Obaidi has declared a magnificent victory in the offensive. In a video release, he adds, "Here we come to you, Anbar. Here we come to you, Nineveh, and we say it with full resolution, confidence, and persistence," naming other provinces that are still under the control of ISIS. Regaining control of Tikrit, which was captured by ISIS extremists last summer, is seen as a key step toward eventually ousting ISIS from Mosul, the capital of Nineveh and the religious heart of the Chaldean Christians' homeland. San Diego's East County is home to an estimated 40,000 to 60,000 Iraqi Chaldeans. CNN reports plans to send 25,000 troops from Iraq to regain control of Mosul. Mortar fire from militants have reportedly fallen silent in Tikrit, which lies 80 miles from Baghdad. Iraqi forces are now working to clear the area of booby traps and roadside bombs, as well as reopen closed police stations, UT San Diego reports. And after that, Interior Minister Mohammed Salem Al-Gaban says the government will work to help displaced residents come home. The Interior Minister hopes for a fund and international help to rebuild the ravaged city. But he states, using the Arabic name for ISIS, Daesh, is completely defeated.
Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Rebecca Williamson. SDG&E has received approval from the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, to use unmanned drones to conduct aerial inspections of its gas and electrical facilities. A spokesperson for SDG&E says use of aerial drones will enable the utility to respond quickly to emergencies and inspect lines and other facilities in remote, difficult-to-access areas. It will also reduce the use of unmanned helicopters, meaning less noise and lower costs. In addition, drones will make it easier to find the cause of power outages and protect employees' safety as well as public safety. The drones measure just 16 inches across and weigh less than a pound. A camera mounted on each drone will relay live images back to a controller, alerting crews if repairs are needed. This is considered particularly critical following a disaster such as an earthquake or a wildfire. Approval comes after SDG&E won approval last year for testing of drones to inspect electrical lines in East County. SDG&E is the second utility in the nation to receive such approval.
This is Ed Barreno with a Crime Beat report. An after-school assistant at Lemon Grove Academy was arrested last Wednesday after she began acting bizarrely and barricaded herself in a classroom along with several children from 1st through 7th grade. The students became fearful of 31-year-old Linda Lira's actions. One young student texted a friend's mother and told her that Lira said there was a devil spirit in the classroom. Another student used a campus walkie-talkie radio to call for help, alerting other teachers and staff. Staff fought with Lira to successfully gain access and were able to safely remove the children. After the students were evacuated, Lira exhibited multiple symptoms of narcotics or hallucinogen use, according to Lieutenant Christopher May with the San Diego Sheriff's Department. While struggling with other school staff, Lira removed her own clothing. When deputies arrived on scene, she had barricaded herself alone in the classroom, upending desks, throwing things throughout the room, and undressing and redressing several times. She was taken into custody by sheriff's deputies and was initially transported to the hospital for evaluation. The next day, after a full day of interviews with student witnesses, 28 felony offenses were identified. Lira was booked at the Las Colinas Women's Detention and Reentry Facility on 14 counts of child endangerment and 14 counts of false imprisonment. As parents arrived to pick up their children following the incident, they were met by administrators who shared information and answered questions. The Lemon Grove School District had school social workers and therapists on hand to provide counseling for all of the students that may have been affected by this incident. The district indicates that it will continue to provide ongoing support for students and staff. Lira was a new employee. She had been on the job and had passed the drug test when hired, CBS Channel 8 News reported. In an arraignment Monday, she pleaded not guilty. She could face over 4 years in prison if convicted on all counts.
Why is the California Public Utilities Commission paying $882 an hour for Michael Peavy's criminal defense when the state's own defense lawyers say that they could do the job for a lot less? As we reported last week, the PUC's chairman, Michael Picker, unilaterally authorized the PUC to pay a criminal defense firm the amount of defense for its former chairman, Michael Peavy, and others who are the targets of both state and federal investigations. Picker initially authorized $49,000 for this, and then he bumped it up to $5.2 million, a 100-fold increase. The Reader reports that the private law firm hired, Shepard Mullen, charges up to $882 an hour. But now a group that represents attorneys employed by the state says that's a waste of taxpayer money, noting that first ratepayers were fleeced, and now the same thing is happening to taxpayers. The California Attorneys, Administrative Law Judges, and Hearing Officers in State Employment, or CASE, has written to the State Personnel Board to point out that the state of California has an entire office of trained criminal defense attorneys at the Office of the State Public Defender. That office has at least 27 lawyers capable of handling the case, and they charge only $30 to $65 an hour, not $882. Moreover, the letter from CASE states the contracting of civil service work is prohibited. In other words, if Peavy wants private counsel, he should pay for it himself and not stick taxpayers with the bill. California's Attorney General and federal investigators are probing allegations of collusion between Peavy and other PUC representatives with the utilities they are supposed to regulate, including evidence of illicit communications revealed in emails obtained through public record searches. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Two federal officials assigned to probe a black market in digital currency are accused of becoming black marketers themselves, allegedly stealing bitcoins from Silk Road, the company they were investigating. A Justice Department investigation exposed the purported corruption. The Justice Department accuses Secret Service agent Sean Bridges of stealing $800,000 in bitcoins. In addition, DEA undercover officer Carl Forrest reportedly used fictitious accounts to blackmail Silk Road's founder, who uses the name Dread Pirate Roberts, into paying him $100,000 in bitcoins to bury evidence in the federal probe. The complaint states, Forrest and Bridges abused their positions as federal agents and engaged in a scheme to defraud a variety of third parties, the public, and the government, all for their own financial enrichment. The Washington Post reports that a lawyer representing Bridges says his client maintains his innocence and will answer the charges at the appropriate time. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, This is Ed Barrena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery. In honor of April Fool's Day this year, we decided to bring you some strange but true stories. I swear we're not making these up, and you can actually Google them to see for yourself. The first one is about drug-sniffing elephants. Yes, you heard that right. The Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John McCain, a Republican from Arizona, is blasting the Defense Department for wasting money on a project to try and train bomb-sniffing elephants. McCain says that so far the researchers have found that while elephants are more effective than dogs actually at sniffing things out, using them is, surprise, surprise, not practical, and no bomb-sniffing elephants have been fielded. Unlike dogs, apparently nobody has ever been able to teach an elephant to slyly stalk its prey without detection, although perhaps Senator McCain is simply uncomfortable with the thought of his party's symbol inadvertently being detonated. The second story is right here in East County. Motorists will soon be able to dunk and dip in a single stop. California's first drive-through Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins ice cream combination shop will be opening in Ramona. Now, here's a scoop. The grand opening on April 7th will feature freebies for guests and a year of free coffee for the first person in line in the drive-thru and at the store, where the doors open at 4:30 in the morning. The Ramona franchise owner of the Sweet Treats retail outlet is, believe it or not, named Mike Stout, and he says, "We've witnessed a lot of buzz surrounding Dunkin' Donuts' expansion to the West Coast, and we're honored to bring the residents of Ramona a whole new experience for California with Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins together." Happy April Fool's Day, everybody. And yes, those two are actually true stories, believe it or not.
All right. Happy April Fool's Day, everyone. We're here at East County Magazine, and we like to do this every year on April Fool's Day. The staff at East County Magazine does our part to have some fun. We let our hair down and give our writers a little creative license in our very own special April Fool's Day spoof edition.
That's right. It's all the news that isn't real, but some people wish it is, Ed, and people can see it at eastcountymagazine.org.
All right. So, Miriam, I understand this year you've solved a few of our region's biggest problems in the pages of East County Magazine. So how about those Chargers?
Well, Ed, everybody wants the Chargers to stay in town, right? And meanwhile, out in East County in Jamul, there was another problem where the Jamul Indians wanted to have some economic prosperity and build a casino, and some members of the community didn't want that there. And so we decided, well, why don't we put the Charger Stadium out there instead? So
great idea.
You'd be able to see the new Jamul Charger Stadium out there. It's got lots of amenities for Charger fans. You'd be able to pull in, have your tailgate party, and have a slot machine in every tailgate parking space, as well as sky lounges right next to the High Rollers lounge.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, a few other details. You can go on and take a look.
That's definitely solving a lot of problems. Now, all year, you've been reporting on the very real problem of fire stations closing during fire season due to staffing and budgeting issues. What solution did you come up with for that issue?
Well, it is a serious problem, Ed, and we drew inspiration in the solution to something the county just announced this week that's actually real. They have sold naming rights to parks and trails across the county. We thought, what if they sold corporate naming rights to fire engines, and you'd be able to use that money and fully staff them all and keep the stations open? So just imagine the Hooters truck coming in to put out the fire, and with some Hooters waitresses out there serving up the firefighters. We figured that'd be good for recruitment, too, for the fire guys. And maybe a Phil's barbecue truck, you know, blazing in there for that authentic smoked flavor with their name on the side of the hook and ladder truck.
All right. It's making me hungry.
Yeah. There's a few more, too, so you can check that out.
All right. And now over to La Mesa. I know there's been some controversy about this proposed Park Station high-rise project. What's going on with that for April Fool's?
Well, the Planning Commission actually voted it down, an 18-story version and even a 10-story, but the developer hasn't given up. They said they're going to come back and try again. And so we thought, well, what if they came back with something that would offer a different kind of benefit package for the community? You know, there's a lot of older seniors in La Mesa, so they're rebranding it. Instead of Park Station, it's going to be Pot Station, and it's going to be vertical farming to meet the medical marijuana needs of the community there. And of course, La Mesa's been looking around for a place for a community garden, so we thought they can put it on the roof of Pot Station.
Yeah, that, I'm sure the city council will vote for that.
Well, there you go. And it's a mixed-use development, and we've got some really cool photos that we photoshopped, too.
All right. Also in La Mesa, they've had an issue where their downtown village area has been torn up for months due to streetscape improvements. Any April Fool's Day news on that?
Absolutely, Ed. You know, they had a real problem there where they had to pull out mature trees because they were having roots that grew into the restaurants and the shops there, tearing up their floors. So you don't want to do that again. So we decided let's have them just plant an entire edible forest landscape throughout the downtown village. So now you could go down there and you'll be able to see the grapevines on one side and the hops on the other for the thriving winery and craft brew industry that's getting started in La Mesa. And
nice.
We're going to have everything else. There'll be honeybees at a community barn where you can get your milk and cheese and everything else. And chickens, they finally legalized those chickens. So what can I say except bon appetit?
Yeah, it could be a little bit of a foretelling of the future of sustainable living. But anyways, we always have fun on April Fool's Day. We want to remind you, before you read an article and share it on April Fool's Day, make sure you read the entire article to the bottom because people are notorious for sharing untrue articles on the internet.
Well, that's right. We always do have our April Fool's Day disclaimer in there, but every year there's somebody who misses it and doesn't read to the bottom. So, you know, just be careful, folks. As we say, it's all the news that isn't true, but some people wish it was.
There's actually, as a side note, there's a report about a Chinese man who read an April Fool's article about a Chinese military hero having his portrait inside West Point Military Academy. And this story that he wrote based on this April Fool's Day article completely inundated into Chinese culture to the where they believe that this hero was actually revered by our military academy. And when they found out it wasn't true, the man was completely humiliated.
Wow.
So be careful.
Well, there's been some pretty strange ones throughout history. There was one, I think it was an Italian newspaper, ran one about spaghetti trees, spaghetti growing on trees with pictures of people out harvesting it. People actually believe that.
Wow.
The London newspaper did one about the Harrods was going to build a floating department store on the Thames River. So this,
wow.
Yeah, we've had our share of them. We solved the wild pig problem one year by announcing the first annual wild pig roundup and rodeo out in Lakeside.
I remember that with the Harley Davidson guys.
There you go. Yeah, hogs on hogs, herding those pigs to the marketplace.
And so that's about it. So everyone have a happy and safe April Fool's Day, and be careful what you post.
If you think San Diego's having some growing pains, you may be right. The Census Bureau's numbers are in, and San Diego County is now the fifth most populous county in the nation. Over 3.3 million people now call San Diego County home, and we're growing fast, too. Between July 2013 and July 2014, we added the fourth most people of any other U.S. county, growing by 41,000 people. So where are those four counties with populations bigger than San Diego County? Los Angeles County is number one with over 10 million residents. Cook County, Illinois, which includes Chicago, has over 5 million inhabitants, followed by Harris County, Texas, home to Houston, with 4.4 million residents, and Maricopa County, Arizona, which includes Phoenix, with just over 4 million people living there. Two other California counties, Orange and Riverside, also made the list of the top 10 most populous counties nationwide. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barena with Brewbeat, covering San Diego's craft beer industry in East County. The Brewers Association is a nonprofit trade group based in Boulder, Colorado, which represents small and independent craft brewers. On March 31st, they released their annual list of the top 50 craft brewing companies for 2014. Four San Diego brewers made the list, including one in the top 10. The list was compiled from data on beer sales volume. The top San Diego craft brewer was Stone Brewing Company, which is based in Escondido. They were ranked number 9 on the list, and they have always pushed the limits on their beers, from the bold flavors to the company logo itself, which features a fierce-looking gargoyle holding a stein. That strategy seems to have paid off, as they are set to open breweries in Virginia and even in Berlin, the UT San Diego reports. Next on the list, ranking at number 31, is Ballast Point Brewing and Spirits. Famous for their line of beers featuring marine-themed names such as Sculpin, Longfin, and Sea Monster, Ballast Point takes pride in the seafaring tradition of San Diego. Coming in at number 45 is a San Diego staple, Carl Strauss. Their Red Trolley Ale is a well-known craft beer, and their restaurants can be found throughout the region and beyond. They offer a fine variety of many traditional and experimental brews. Finally, making their debut in the top 50 is Green Flash Brewing Company at number 48. Their famous West Coast India Pale Ale has no doubt influenced brewers all over, with its bitter and hoppy finish.
A true West Coast brewing operation, Green Flash is based in San Diego and creates a wide variety of beers with creative names such as Le Freak and Palate Wrecker. With so many acclaimed brews in San Diego, it's no wonder that our region is becoming world famous as a beer capital. The full list of craft brewers can be found at www.brewersassociation.org. Remember, though, you must be 21 or older to drink beer, and please drink responsibly.
Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Rebecca Williamson. The Alcohol and Police Department, along with other law enforcement agencies, is helping to launch a two-month icon promotion across Southern California on behalf of the Special Olympics. On Wednesday, April 8th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., law enforcement and other teams will be at the ARCO AMPM located at 1518 North Magnolia Avenue in El Cajon. They will offer a full-service environment for customers by washing windows and pumping gas while promoting the icon sales in stores to benefit Special Olympics, empowering disabled athletes.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are two representatives from the San Diego Concert Band. We have with us Chuck Brown, president and founding member, and the conductor, Roy Anthony. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, the San Diego Concert Band has been around a long time. Chuck, can you start by giving us a little bit of history about how the band got started?
The band was originally formed in 1989 in La Mesa, and it had full sponsorship by Grossmont Center and the city of La Mesa for several years. But as the economy went the wrong direction, the band became independent, and unlike many other community bands in San Diego, we are not supported or funded by an educational institution or another similar type of organization. Since 1989, we've had quite a series of local celebrities as our MCs for the shows. Kingsley McLaren, who's now with XLNC, was our first ever MC for our concert, which was at Grossmont High School. Mm-hmm. We expected family and friends, and we had to hold up the concert because over 800 people showed up, which made the news in La Mesa Press as well as San Diego. Others have been Larry Himmel. Pat Brown has been a staunch member. She did a feature on the band with her PM Magazine show back when she had the half-hour series in the 70s. We made her an honorary founding member because of that. Carol LeBeau, Joe Hookerhands, and currently Mark Larson is going to be our MC at our upcoming concert.
And that concert, by the way, is going to be on April 7th at the Croc Center, and we're going to be telling you all about that, listeners, in just a little bit.
So tell us a little bit more about the background of the band.
The band currently has about 96 members from all walks of life, some working, some not. A large number of our players are retirees. I am an information technology career professional and CIO. We have music educators, physicians, auto mechanics,
all kinds of musicians.
And the band currently is performing at Croc Theater, which is sell-out crowds most every time. We play two formal concerts there, one in the holiday season, and our upcoming concert in April as a spring concert. In addition, we do a joint fundraiser with the Water Conservation Garden in Rancho San Diego. We started that 2 years ago, and it's been very successful for both the band and the garden for community awareness as well as fundraising. And we perform a full series of summer concerts, sometimes two a month, and they're free concerts in various parks around the county. And we play at music festivals in Poway and Temecula.
Very good. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing some of those. Now, speaking of retired educators, Roy, I understand that you have just received a major honor. You were named the best retired music educator in California. Tell us who presented that and a little bit of background. I know listeners, for those of you from East County, many of you may have been taught by Roy in some of our local schools.
Well, thank you very much. I was surprised when the CMEA, the California Music Educators Association, contacted me and told me that they would like to present this award in February. I retired from teaching in 2004, but I continue to work with schools every week. I love it. I think once you're a teacher, you just can't walk away. At least I can't walk away from it. I enjoy doing it immensely. Mm-hmm. I taught in two local high schools. I was at Mount McGill High School for 11 years, and then my last years were at Valhalla High School in Rancho San Diego. I taught there for 8 years before retiring. Since then, I also spent 2 years filling in as an adjunct professor at Point Loma Nazarene University.
And now you're the conductor of the San Diego Concert Band, and I understand that last year's concert, a spring concert, featured your son, Ryan, who is also a graduate of Mount McGill High School.
Yeah, that was a very exciting time for me. It was our 25th anniversary concert with the San Diego Concert Band. And we had discussed what type of concert and who to have as a special guest, and we were all in agreement it would be good to have my son come in.
Who had just been through a major medical ordeal, I understand, and this was really a triumphant moment. Tell us about that.
Yes, in 2012, he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is an incurable cancer, and it was quite a shock to all of us. And there is, for a long time, we didn't even know if he would ever be able to play his trumpet again. Mm. And he's in complete remission now and doing wonderful. He plays principal trumpet with the Dallas Symphony, also does traveling throughout the states, doing a lot of solo work. So we're very thankful for that. And he came in and we had a sellout. We did two concerts back to back, and he did great. He performed seven numbers on each concert. It was great for a lot of the alumni from Mount McGill High School where he graduated. They were all there and had their little cheering section.
And I understand you had an interesting finale for that.
Yes, it was. The theme song for Mount McGill is La Virgen de la Macarena. And during the applause at the end of the concert, he started that up from the back of the hall. And Mount McGill alumni went crazy.
I'll bet they did. Well, congratulations, and it's wonderful to hear that he's doing so well. And we should mention, we understand he was a recipient of stem cell transplant that helped him to overcome the cancer and go into remission.
Yes, in May he underwent stem cell transplant, and it was very, very successful. They had told him it'd be about 6 months before he could play his trumpet, but he recuperated so well that 1 month from the day of his transplant, he was sitting back with the Dallas Symphony playing his trumpet again, the lead trumpet.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you told me the cancer was in 80% of his bones before that.
Yeah, it was 80%. He did not tell me that originally. I found that out and I asked him about it, and he goes, "I didn't want to worry you, Dad."
Yeah, sure.
So when I heard that, it was just, it made it even more exciting and an added blessing.
Now, you have just come back from joining your son in Dallas, where I understand you helped out on something called the Cancer Blows Concert, raising money to combat cancer with cancer research.
Yeah, that started when he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. He received a phone call from Doc Severinsen, who Ryan had been a friend with for a number of years.
Yeah, and famous trumpet player.
Doc was talking to him and said, "What can I do for you?" And Ryan says, "I want to be able to be on the stage with you one more time." Excuse me. And so that started the ball rolling, and many other trumpeters contacted him and said, "We would like to do it also." So for a year and a half, he's been planning this concert. It started off being a one-night event, but it ended up being three nights. The opening night, they had every principal trumpet player from all the leading symphonies, Chicago, New York, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Atlanta, and I can't remember all of them, but they were all there performing together. And then it climaxed on Wednesday with the big concert with the Dallas Symphony playing the first half, and it was more classical oriented. People like Phil Smith and Alan Vizzuti and Vince DiMartino. The second half was the jazz half, and that featured Arturo Sandoval with Wycliffe Gordon, rather, on trombone, Marvin Stamm, a jazz trumpeter, and climaxed with Doc Severinsen.
What an amazing lineup and a marvelous experience. Now, I understand that you did the video portion of this and that there is a music video that's going to be coming out very soon.
Yes, I was in the truck during the concert calling the camera shots, and it was exciting for me to be a part of this event. And the event was in order to raise awareness for cancer research and raising money for cancer research.
And if people want to get that music video, where will it be available?
In about 3 or 4 weeks, you'll find it posted. If you go to the cancerblows.com website, cancerblows.com, you can order a video, a DVD, and also a CD will be available.
Very good. With all those famous trumpet players, and also have the money go for a very worthy cause, which is fighting cancer. Speaking of videos, Chuck, I understand that the San Diego Concert Band may have their music featured in another major video, or rather a motion picture.
That's right, Miriam. About 6 months ago, sometime last early fall, Roy was contacted by an Italian movie company that is very well known for its in-country documentaries. They've done several documentaries focusing on an aspect of some particular country, including a couple in the U.S. And they're planning to do a video for the 150th birthday celebration of Edgar Lee Masters, the poet and dramatist. Mm. And one of the pieces that they wanted to include is called Shenandoah. It's a very popular ballad. And they contacted us to see if we could provide the music for them. They said they reviewed over 80 YouTube clips from all kinds of organizations, professional and amateur, who had recorded versions of Shenandoah, and they picked ours.
Very impressive. And congratulations.
It's currently in negotiation between the movie company and the music publisher for rights to provide the performance as part of their movie.
Well, that's very exciting. And speaking of exciting, I understand that the San Diego Concert Band is going after another big award, this time a national one for Sousa music. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's an award done by the John Philip Sousa Foundation, which has many, many different avenues for musicianship. For instance, there's the John Philip Sousa Award, which is done predominantly in high school bands for the outstanding musician of any particular year. There are other awards, and their community band and orchestra track has an award for musical excellence by community bands. And it's a long process. We're on a 5-year course that by the end of 2016 we'll probably be able to apply for the award. It requires a lot of documentation and work for about 5 years worth of performances by a particular band, including a demonstration CD of the music that we performed. And the selection is done totally in the blind. The judges do not know the name of the band that's performing for their award.
Well, very interesting.
It's an interesting award because it's not one of those you win and everybody else loses. They can award none or several Sudler Silver Scroll Awards to concert bands, all based on the quality of the performance and documentation provided by the particular band.
Well, we certainly wish you well on that. And listeners, we thought it would be a treat today to play a little excerpt for you from one of those Sousa marches. So we're going to play a little bit of the Liberty Bell March performed by the San Diego Concert Band. And this is off of their America the Beautiful CD. So put on your marching shoes, listeners, and listen up. That was wonderful. I'm still tapping my toes. Now,
If people want to come hear more of the San Diego Concert Band, tell us a little bit about what's coming up at your 26th annual Spring Celebration concert, which I understand is going to be on Tuesday, April 7th at 7 o'clock at the Joan Crock Performing Arts Center.
Yes, this is entitled the Springtime Classics, and it's a little different. Our summer programs are all pop-oriented. This is going to be sort of band classics with marches, a couple of the overtures, Overture to Candide, which is a very popular one by Leonard Bernstein, the finale to Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, which is a nice, big, heavy piece. And yeah, it's exciting for us to be able to put these musicians together and play this level of music. So we're looking forward to it.
It sounds marvelous, and I see that the agenda also includes some Verdi and some Wagner, several other works as well, including a world premiere arrangement for clarinet, quintet, and band featuring the San Diego Clarinet Quintet.
Yeah, we're very excited to have them as part of the concert this year. They're going to do a couple numbers by themselves, and then there is this world premiere of a number with the quintet and the band together.
Very exciting. Now, if people want to get tickets or more information about the concert or about the San Diego Concert Band, where can they go?
We have a website, sandiegoconcertband.com, and it has information about the upcoming concert and also all of our concerts and the dates and times during the summer, various locations throughout the community.
Well, fantastic. We'll also be listing those concerts on our calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
In addition, if your listeners want to have a chance to hear some of our previous performances, there are excerpts from the last two or three years' worth of spring and holiday concerts there, including a little section of Shenandoah.
Very good. I look forward to listening to that myself. Well, I want to thank both of you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes extravaganzas, an Easter bunny train, and a harmonica festival.
We'll also have preview of coming attractions, including a Baroque music concert at Cuyamaca College, the Taste of Julian Country Culinary Tour, the world-famous Romero Brothers performing classical guitar music, and a flash jam featuring hundreds of musicians playing old-time fiddle music across the town of Julian.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
12 top bands will take stage at the 16th annual Spring Harp Fest, a harmonica extravaganza at La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 4th, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This annual outdoor family-oriented music tribute is a fundraiser to support children's music education in San Diego. Last year, the organization donated $3,000 of the proceeds to the Blues Lovers United of San Diego Blues in the Schools program to help pass the love of the harmonica on to the next generation. For a full lineup, see springharpfest.org.
Sandy Lakes invites the public to its annual extravaganza on April 4th. This community event features continuous egg hunts for children ages 8 and under, live entertainment, a petting zoo, pony rides, craft booths, and carnival rides brought to you by the City of Santee and the Padre Dam Municipal Water District. For full details, hop on over to santeelakes.com.
The Easter Bunny train will be rolling out of Campo Depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum on April 4th. This annual family event includes a ride aboard the vintage train and an Easter egg hunt. For details, visit psrm.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Members of the San Diego Early Music Society will be performing Baroque Concertos for Harp, Mandolin, and Flute at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Center on Thursday, April 9th at 7:30 p.m. Founded in 1985 by musicians dedicated to presenting period performances of music of the 18th and early 19th centuries, this 22-piece ensemble has been hailed around the world. The program includes works by Vivaldi, Telemann, Durante, Corelli, and Handel. For more information, visit sdems.org.
Julian, San Diego's historic gold community, hosts A Taste of Julian on April 11th from 1 to 5 p.m. This rural dining adventure features a self-guided culinary tour of restaurants, wineries, and breweries. Tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall at 2129 Main Street, along with your map of participating restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For details or tickets, visit julianca.com.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to an open farm tour on April 11th and 12th from 1 until 4 p.m. An animal show featuring the Camel Dairy's entertaining residents will be staged at 1:30, after which you can enjoy camel rides, camel petting, and photos. For more information, visit cameldairy.com.
East County resident Nancy Manning wants us to know, be a part of the Bark at the Bay benefit, a fundraising extravaganza for labs and more rescue from shelters to homes since 2011. Your doggone details are Saturday, May 16th, 2015, 5:30 to 9, Baja Room, Marina Village in San Diego. To find out more, visit their website at labsandmore.org.
Saturday, April 11th is Sweet Pea Day at Summers Pass Farms in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon. This annual event celebrates fragrant, old-fashioned sweet pea flowers in full glory. Arrive early for this popular occasion. Gates open at 9 a.m., and cutting your own bouquets in a beautiful sweet pea maze starts at 11 a.m., while the blossoms last. You can also enjoy live music and snacks at a coffee bar or bring a picnic to enjoy on the grass. Find out more at summerspassfarms.com.
The City of La Mesa will host April Pools Day on April 11th from 12 to 3 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Pool to promote water safety. Activities include swimming lessons, water safety and CPR presentations, synchronized swimming and water polo demonstrations, and a mock rescue by city lifeguards and the fire department. April Pools Day is a free event for the whole family, so bring your swimsuits.
The Julian Family Fiddle Camp will be held at Camp Cedar Glen April 8th through 12th, providing an immersion-style roots music camp for folks of all ages and levels wanting to improve their skills on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, or old-time banjo. Some of the most renowned North American artists serve as faculty, with evening concerts for the public on Friday, April 10th and Saturday, April 11th at 7 p.m. For more information, visit familyfiddlecamp.com.
Flash Jam is an annual gathering of musicians who converge in front of Julian's Town Hall to play a trio of traditional old-time fiddle tunes on April 12th at 2 p.m. The event draws acoustic string musicians of all ages and abilities from far and near, with hundreds coming to fill the town with music. After the first round of tunes at the Town Hall, the musicians move to several other locations along Main Street to repeat their performance.
Three generations of the famous Romero's family will perform a guitar music concert on Sunday, April 12th at 2 p.m. in the Poway Center for the Performing Arts. The Romero's have performed for dignitaries around the world, including the President of the United States, His Royal Majesty of Spain, and Pope John Paul II at the Vatican. You can also opt to dine under the stars before the show with a gourmet meal catered by Café Merlot. For more information or tickets, visit poweyarts.org.
Get ready to rev up. Cajon Classic Cruises is rolling out its 2015 season starting Wednesday, April 22nd, with a full street closure for opening night. The cruises will continue all summer long on Wednesday nights from 5 to 8 p.m. The second week, April 29th, will celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Other highlights include Jimmy Johnson Night, a military tribute, and Thunder on Main Street. For the full Cajon Classic Cruises season lineup, visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. Pope Francis, on a flight to Rome, declared to reporters, "In September, God willing, I will canonize Junipero Serra in the United States." In other words, the Pope intends to make Junipero Serra a Roman Catholic saint. When Father Junipero Serra, with a battalion of Spanish soldiers, built a mission near Kumeyaay Bay in 1769, there were around 300,000 indigenous people living in California. Serra was the founder of 9 Roman Catholic missions from San Diego's Mission de Alcala to San Francisco. Serra's accomplishment is hailed as the origin story for California, filled with grand deeds. It is said that Serra performed a miracle by curing a nun in St. Louis of lupus. While beatification requires a miracle, the next step, canonization or sainthood, requires a second miracle. But Pope Francis, a fellow Jesuit, made an exception, calling Serra a holy man and a great evangelizer. Serra baptized nearly 6,000 Indians. It was for Serra's great evangelizing that Pope Francis points to as qualifying him as a saint. However, Junipero Serra is no saint to indigenous people. He viewed the indigenous tribes as heathens who desperately needed the gospel, but the indigenous people of California paid a high price for their conversion. The missions were built with Indian slave labor. Their ancient food supplies dwindled. Smallpox, measles, plagues, and other diseases spiked as they came together in these tight concentrations and their numbers plummeted. According to author and historian Robert Jackson, given a native population collapse in the Spanish Catholic missions of Alta California, any Indian person consigned to or born in a mission had been pretty much given a death sentence. The massive destruction of the original nations and peoples of California is the reason why there ought to be a mourning rather than a celebration associated with the ship San Salvador and the Spanish Catholic mission system. Stephen Newcomb, co-founder of the Indigenous Law Institute, wrote, "Pope Francis and the Vatican are going to celebrate the deadly and unsaintly Spanish Catholic mission system by bestowing sainthood on Junipero Serra. What does that say about a religion and a society when it pretends that a tradition of dehumanization and brutal domination is a tradition of virtue and saintliness? The same institute that brought us the Crusades, a Borgia Pope, and the Inquisition is now going to sanctify Serra's legacy." Father Manuel Tony Diaz, the administrator of the San Gabriel mission founded in 1771 by Serra, said his joyous reaction to the announcement of the Padre's canonization was tempered by the knowledge that some of his own parishioners look upon Serra as a reminder of a lost or frayed tribal history. At the time when Juan Cabrillo sailed into Kumeyaay Bay, the Kumeyaay Nation had a complex way of living off the land, migrating from the coast to the foothills every year to follow the food supply, cultivating and harvesting staples and weaving elaborate baskets to store and carry their goods. They manipulated the chaparral with fire to produce more food to pick and animals to hunt. Cattle ranching and sheep grazing by the Europeans led to the collapse of the traditional Kumeyaay economy, aided by a later law banning the Indians from burning the landscape. Those who converted were forced to drop their old ways and eat, dress, and act like the Europeans. Public Broadcasting produced an alarming documentary on Serra and the mission system. They had this to say. "Despite the frequent conflicts between military and religious authority for Alta California's Indians, the missions and their Franciscan administrators were part and parcel of an enormous destructive colonization process. The Spanish, largely through disease, were responsible for a population decline from about 300,000 Indians in 1769 to about 200,000 by 1821. The strenuous work regime and high population density within the missions themselves also caused high death rates among the mission Indians. By law, all baptized Indians subjected themselves completely to the authority of the Franciscans. They could be whipped, shackled, or imprisoned for disobedience and hunted down if they fled the mission grounds. Indian recruits, who were often forced to convert nearly at gunpoint, could be expected to survive mission life for only about 10 years. As one friar noted, the Indians live well free, but as soon as we reduce them to a Christian and community life, they fatten, sicken, and die. In Junipero Serra's defense, Gregory Orfaleo, who wrote a biography of Serra, said, "When the Kumeyaay sacked the San Diego mission in 1775, killing three Spaniards, the viceroy captured about a dozen Indians and called for their execution. But Serra called for the prisoners' release and pleaded their case to the viceroy in a letter in which he wrote, 'As to the killers, let them live so that he can be saved, for that is the purpose of our coming here and its sole justification.'" In doing so, Orfalea says Serra modeled his life on the gospel of love, not a desire for land or gold. And in this way, he was different from Columbus, who enslaved and tortured Caribbean natives in his quest for precious metals. Orfalea said Pope Francis' decision was no surprise. A Jesuit who took the name after the saint and founder of the Franciscan order, Francis does not believe in Catholicism confined to the ivory tower. Serra was a kindred spirit who abandoned a high-profile academic post to take on the dangerous, austere life of a missionary. Ruben Mendoza, coordinator of California Mission Archaeology at Cal State Monterey Bay, says the canonization is long overdue. "I've always felt the canonization process was stymied through misinformation and politicalization and laying blame and onus on one individual who was actually in constant conflict with the governors and military commanders in New Spain over how they were treating the Indians." He and others said Serra fought efforts to enslave the Indians, and whippings were not limited to natives, but a common method of discipline in the Spanish Empire. Steve Newcomb concludes, "The fact remains that the Juan Cabrillo ship San Salvador was built with the spent lives of Indians and crushing Indian slave labor. The 21 Spanish Catholic missions were also built with Indian slave labor and resulted in a genocidal-level population collapse among the native nations of the geographical area known as California." Ron Andrade, executive director of the Los Santos City and County Native American Indian Commission, compared Junipero Serra to the Spanish conquistadors who subjugated South America. Andrade, a Luiseno Indian from the La Jolla Band of Kumeyaay, said Serra decimated the Indian population. "Everywhere they put a mission, the majority of Indians are gone," Andrade said, "and Serra knew what they were doing. They were taking the land, taking the crops. He knew the soldiers were raping women, and he turned his head." Many tribes, including the Luiseno, the Juaneño, and the Gabrielino, survived the mission era through partial integration with each other and Spanish culture, but others fled inland or lost their culture completely, Andrade said. The choice of Serra for canonization is especially unfortunate given the Catholic Church has been making its first attempts at reconciliation with some of California's indigenous people who experienced devastating losses due to the colonial system Serra ushered in. On December 22, 2012, Bishop Richard Garcia of the Monterey Diocese offered the Ama Mutsin tribal band apologies from the church. He invited people to a massive reconciliation between the church and tribal members at Mission San Juan Bautista. In other former missions, tribal communities have sought reconciliation for the trauma their ancestors experienced, wounds that often remain open today. The selection of Junipero Serra as a saint seems antithetical to the current emphasis on and need for reconciliation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.